Hey guys, this is Mike. Remember about a month ago I got together with Ashley Dano and we did an update on all the Smart Kitchen news? Well, we're doing it again, so I hope you enjoy this. Also, if you're listening to this and you're in the Bay Area, you're just about out of time to get tickets to our event at Williams-Sonoma headquarters on Thursday, May 12th. Go to smartkitchensummit.com, look for the Future Kitchen event, and we'll see you there. All right, folks, enjoy. Welcome to the Smart Kitchen Show. My name is Mike Wolf. The Smart Kitchen Show is a podcast about the kitchen, technology, and food, and the story of a conference that brings all those things together. I'm your host, Michael Wolf, and I put this podcast together because in the process of creating the Smart Kitchen Summit, I've been meeting lots of great folks that I thought you should hear from too. If you'd like to listen to more Smart Kitchen shows, you can find them in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also go to smartkitchensummit.com/show. The Smart Kitchen Summit will be back in 2016 on October 5th and 6th in Seattle. If you'd like to go, just go to smartkitchensummit.com. for more information. And now, on to the show. So, Ashley, you're not coming out to San Francisco for our event at Williams-Sonoma, apparently.
No, I'm very sad to be missing it, but it is going to be pretty awesome. I'm missing Michael Voltaggio of Top Chef fame, which is a huge bummer.
Yeah, you're not only missing that, you're missing the Bon Vivants.
Yes, tell me about that. Celebrity bartenders.
That's all we were. You just basically said it all. Celebrity bartenders making drinks. And then I just found out today we're actually going to have the Juicero guys doing live demos. My friend Malachi Moynihan, who used to run the hardware for Amazon's Echo, like he was the guy driving the engineering on that, he went over to Juicero, and now that they're out of stealth, we could talk about that, but they'll actually be showing the juicer. By the way, you haven't tasted the juice yet out of the Juicero yet.
No, but do you think that the juice could be combined with some of the alcohol from the
Oh, that's a great idea.
Bartenders?
Yes.
Right? See? It's going to be amazing. You guys are going to have like the ultimate smart cocktails at this event.
Yeah. So that's actually this Thursday. Hopefully we'll get this podcast out in time for people who listen to it and want to go to know about it. There's still a few tickets left, not a ton. And it's at Williams-Sonoma headquarters. They have like a test kitchen with an event venue, but that'll be fun.
Yeah, it should be a really good time to get to A, see what Williams-Sonoma headquarters are like, and also talk to some of the smartest people in kitchen tech right now. So
it's probably good you're not going because I have a feeling you might have snuck off and like
just started wandering around.
Yeah. Let's get on to the news. You heard about this whole Samsung like kind of crazy Frankenfridge, as I've called before.
I saw this monster at CES. It was incredible.
And it's kind of visually kind of stunning, mainly because of the size of this monster like touchscreen on the front. Like it's a really huge 21-inch touchscreen embedded in a Samsung refrigerator. They announced it at CES, and it's just thus last week or so became commercially available.
Yeah, so the touchscreen is designed to be sort of a window into like your home activities, but also entertainment and music and kind of like apps right on your fridge. So it basically takes over where you would put, you know, magnets with like your kids' artwork or, you know, notes to your family members, I guess.
Yes, digital artwork now. That's the thing. So I think it actually has like a drawing app your kids can put their little sketches on. 'Cause paper drawings for your kids is so...
So 2009.
Yeah, so 2009. And so, but the reviews on this thing have been kind of interesting to watch come in. They're kind of mixed. I always like the CNET reviews because they actually bring these things in and give them like a nice thorough run through. I think Rycrest has already started playing with these things down in the Kentucky. Is it Kentucky? We're seeing its smart homes.
Yeah.
And
that's where their house is.
And his reviews were kind of mixed. One of the things I liked that he pointed out, I didn't know they had, was the ability to do like with the visual image recognition, you actually tag the different things as you put them in fairly easy. And so you can assign some expiration dates to the different things. Of course, the shortcoming on that is you may actually move your stuff around, I think. So it looks like it may break down a little bit. But That was interesting. Did you see the Rehnquist review?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I think, you know, the healthy dose of skepticism that CNET always takes is appreciated, because I do think that there's sort of that, like, it's a really cool product in terms of, like, just what, you know, the take on the fridge, right? It's a completely new take on what your fridge can do. But the tagging is kind of interesting. It also made me sort of think about Innit, which is one of the groups that launched at the Smart Kitchen Summit last year and has this sort of, you know, kind of building a technology with a warehouse of food data behind it, so that potentially it could do something like what Samsung's trying to do, right? Where the cameras are inside and it can see your food, but instead of making you tag it, it's already going to know what it is and take that guesswork out. So I think about, like, you know, the tagging aspect, like, are people going to keep up with that? Is that something that people are going to, like, actively use versus, you know, I want my food to tell me, right? I don't necessarily want to put that data in myself.
Yeah. That's the thing with the fridges, like, especially these early ones. A lot of them have, like, put a burden of work on the consumer, which to me is always going to set a product up for failure. If it, like, becomes work, it kind of goes back to why Foursquare has largely failed. Like, you know, you started requiring, like, it became work over time. Checking in, I'm like, oh, I have to check in again. I could see, oh, I have to kind of register my milk again every time you put something in. So I think that's a great point. The other big point with this thing is, Here's the thing with Samsung. It generally comes in as not quite like the super high-end brand, but it comes in as a pretty premium brand. This thing has a very premium price point. It's $6,000. And
yeah, it's sort of stunning in terms of how much it would cost you for a new fridge.
And that price point to me is a little intimidating if I'm a discerning buyer, because I think, okay, this has fairly cutting-edge technology. What's this technology going to look like? How's it going to age in 5 years? Does the embedded touch screen look good? Have they been software updating it? I know Samsung tends to lose interest essentially in some of these initiatives they do. I mean, they're kind of famous for having, like, putting out new initiatives every year or two and then losing interest if there's not a lot of commercial success.
Yeah, I also think about kind of the growing, like, the ecosystem in the kitchen right now is so new, and there's just so much sort of coming into the space in terms of new tech and platforms. And, you know, if I were someone who was even going to consider buying one of these fridges, I would assume that the consumer who's interested is also kind of, you know, maybe interested in new tech in their kitchen and putting other things in their kitchen. And, like, right, 5 years down the road, the ecosystem around the fridge might look really different. And is the fridge going to keep up with that? Is it going to work with that stuff? Or is it just going to be, like, you know, its own island over there, not upgradable, not updatable? And also, you just dropped 6Gs on it, so maybe you're not going to probably buy another one anytime soon.
Yeah, because that's the thing about technology and the weird, I guess, disconnect with these types of products that generally have 15-year lifespans. I mean, that's generally what you expect a lot of consumers for an investment like a fridge is to last 10 to 15 years. So when you start to think about these things becoming more technology-centric, more connected, the aging over time becomes a real consideration. And so we'll see where it goes. I mean, I think it's interesting. I'm glad Samsung's, like, excited about this category. They also just announced their Wi-Fi range, which – going back to CNET, I think Ashley did a nice rerun. She'll actually be speaking at the Smart Kitchen Summit as well. Ashley Clark. So they're definitely getting excited about this category. Obviously, Samsung comes at this broader smart home with a lot of different ways, like SmartThings, for example. But their appliance division is definitely going into this thing pretty full bore lately.
Yeah, I sort of see, like, the next thing happening here is a SNL skit about this fridge where, like, your kid comes home with artwork and is like, mommy, look at this picture. Yeah. And you're just like, sorry, honey, it's not digital. I can't hang it up. I feel like that could be perfect.
Yeah, that's total. Like, it's almost like the vessel on Stephen Colbert. I think it was like 2014. That was pretty classic. So when a category you're following makes one of these shows, it's always kind of fun.
Yeah, well, so speaking of sort of big brands in, you know, in the home, so Sears just recently announced that they're going to sort of be providing a line of kind of sensible smart home tech. Did you see that story also actually on CNET?
Did they actually use the word sensible, or is that, like, your own description?
CNET used it. CNET used sensible.
Okay. And how do you define sensible versus whimsical? Like, are there whimsical products? I don't quite.
I think it was like, you know, like not sexy, right? Like, oh, okay. So it was like, power.
Yeah. I guess using the terms not sexy in your advertising and marketing is probably not something you want to do in your.
No. No, no, definitely not. I mean, I wouldn't use that if I was writing their press release. So some of the products that Sears is sort of going to be supplying for the connected home are like a smart water heater and different like things around air conditioning and air quality and things like that. So not like you maybe the most sleek devices or things that you're running out to get right now in your smart home, but certainly stuff that people are buying and upgrading in their houses. And Sears is kind of your traditional home brand. But the question is, what is going to happen from here? Because they are sort of one of the pillar brands for home retail. So are they going to, is this a foray into the kitchen? Is this them stepping in and maybe saying they're going to start to look at smart fridges and smart appliances or be a retailer for that space? It's sort of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think the announcement I saw and what I saw the news was the three of their private brands came out with essentially smart connected products. Kenmore was one of them. I think there are Kenmore fridges. The Craftsman product line, they also had like a Craftsman, believe it or not, smart steerable riding mower, a wireless Craftsman.
I thought actually that was a self-driving mower, but okay. I realized upon further reading it was not. It was just, so it doesn't drive. It doesn't mow the lawn for you. So that's disappointing.
But, the thing about – here's an interesting contrast, right? So they haven't announced anything like a refrigerator or like a big white good, other than right. I guess we can consider an air conditioner a white good. But that they really kind of hit that more, I guess, modest income household versus like the Samsung, which I would consider like a middle income to high income type of product. They kind of come in. So I think it's an important for companies like Sears with their private brands to get into the markets like this and establish themselves. Now, there's a whole other conversation about Sears and are they, kind of a relic of the past? I mean, they're a pretty iconic brand. We can definitely say that. But, I've talked a lot about, others have talked about how retail isn't very well set up to show consumers the value of connector products. I mean, the traditional aisles of products, you don't really get that walking through. I mean, you can certainly open a fridge, open up like a dishwasher, and see how sturdy it feels, what the metal looks like, the quality of it, but the benefits of it being connected, that's really hard to communicate. And so I think it'll be particularly interesting for an old school retailer like Sears, how they move towards communicating those. I mean, I know that Radio Shack is kind of a last gasp, really kind of tried to go towards connected products before they kind of basically went bankrupt. I'm not saying that's what's happening with Sears, but, if they are looking at this as a way to salvage themselves, they're going to have to figure out a way to show the value. And that goes as much for kitchen as for other smart home products as well.
Yeah. I mean, if you walk into a Sears today, like the last time I was in Sears is when I needed a washer dryer, right? Like, or we moved into a new house. And I do think that it is the first place people will go, or one of the first places people will go for good prices. They generally always have, their prices are always great compared to like a Best Buy or, even like a Target. And you think about like people going in there and sort of just not shopping for smart home goods, but shopping for appliances and then sort of being surprised with like the different array of what's available. I mean, that's kind of like what Lowe's has done in a way. If you go into Lowe's, right, and you go to where their thermostats are, they do have a smart home area, which is kind of a disaster. But in their thermostat area, like Nest has this huge display. If you're just someone who's going there to buy a new thermostat because yours broke and then you see the Nest and it's like on this really beautiful, like panel thing and they have all like the, you might buy it just because you think it's like got all these cool features. You're not necessarily there because you wanted to buy a smart product. You're just there because you wanted a thermostat. And maybe that's how Sears could sort of look at it. Like they're not going to attract people who are quote smart home consumers yet. And I don't even know that there's that many people who are smart home consumers, but just people looking to buy stuff, to upgrade in their homes or their new homes. And then you can sort of show them the value of, connected tech when they walk in the door.
It's funny when I was working at ABI, it's a research company based in New York back in around 2007, 2008, the mobile analysts were forecasting how fast people would adopt smartphones. And by and large, people, the mobile analysts, and I wasn't one of the ones looking at mobile technology as closely as they were, they really thought that smartphones would take a lot longer. Like, you know, they're forecasting up to 2015 and 16 and thought penetration would be way lower, you know, like 20% or something. And what I think they forgot to see or didn't really see at the time is like how easy it was to use something like an iPhone and how attractive it is and how eventually everyone saw each other using them. I don't know if like you eventually get to that like consumer envy factor that we got with iPhones, but I certainly think like the usability, if it gets to the point where it's super usable and the value is easily conveyed, I think I could see a lot of consumers opting for these new kind of more connected products, particularly if like, you know, the value's there and the consumer experience isn't complicated by the technology.
Yeah. I mean, the iPhone in particular became so big because it became like a status symbol in a way. Like people saw, you know, you wanted to have an iPhone, you wanted the latest iPhone. Like that was a thing for, and it still is, I think, to this day. And like smart home tech could definitely have that appeal. Like you walk into someone's house and you sort of see some of these gadgets. Now, not all smart home tech is sexy though. So I think it's, you know what I mean? Like some of it's just really like white boxes in your house.
Yeah. You don't get dishwasher envy.
No, or like door window sensor envy. You're not like, ooh, those things, I need those in my door right now. That's no, not at all.
Speaking of, well, I think something that I would get envious of is if someone that were had like really cool integration with Alexa in their kitchen. And so I've been following Alexa pretty closely. And I think on the last newsletter we wrote about the Tribi integration, Tribi had this cool kitchen speaker that had Alexa integration. I think it was the first third-party device to do that. There's just definitely a lot of like Alexa news lately. And I think it's an interesting thing to talk about with regards to the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly in the industry becoming like the thing that you have to do now is to integrate with Amazon Echo, right? In order to have sort of interesting stuff happening because everybody's doing it and everybody wants to be doing it. And also on the consumer side, like you have an Echo. I have an Echo in my kitchen. Every time someone walks into my house and they see me using it or they see the little blue ring light up, they're like, and they don't know what it is. They're fascinated. Like, what is that? And then they want to talk to it. And then it's definitely the cool kid in town for sure. But Tribi is interesting because Tribi, like when it came out, right, it's this cute little sort of kind of niche speaker in a way. It's fun. It's got a fun design. It's meant to sort of sit on your, it's got a magnet, sits on your refrigerator. And it seemed like maybe it was going to be a competitor in some way because it's also a speaker, but sort of they're smart. They're using the Echo Wave to sort of say, you know, no, we're going to be an extender. We're going to be like the dedicated Echo of the kitchen. Take your Echo somewhere else and we'll give you all the same Alexa functionality, which I think is, you know, it's pretty interesting.
A lot of times the first big company to pop in a new category, and this is what I would call Alexa is like the virtual assistant and the AI technology for the home at this point. If they have the staying power to kind of dominate, certainly with Amazon's resources behind that, that helps. But I don't know if you saw today at TechCrunch Disrupt, which I've kind of been following I've been side glancing what's happening over there. The Siri creator, this guy named Doug Kitlos, actually debuted his new generation Siri called Viv, which he's calling the intelligent interface of everything. But that'll be interesting to see if like some of these other guys can get any sort of success or traction in the home. I know that there's another company called Josh. There's a new AI called Josh.ai, which is actually really high end, pretty expensive. They're trying to target the home as well. So it'll be interesting to watch some of the other comers as well.
Yeah, I think, I've heard, you know, at CES, I heard lots of conversations between manufacturers who were talking about like proprietary voice integration and, you know, trying to come up with something that still delivers that voice element, even if they can't work with Echo or whatever. And it does sort of seem like, you know, I saw the Viv announcement too, like it seems like there's going to be like these core personalities in the voice integration market. And then, you know, you either integrate with them or I guess you create your own, but I'm not sure if that's going to be super successful, but I don't know. Alexa is the popular date at the prom right now. If that's a kosher thing to say, I don't know if it is, but something. She's really popular. So speaking of sort of popular integration, so for a long time and still, I guess, in smart home, you know, the IFT integration is sort of like a big thing. Everybody's talking about the if this, then that. So did you see the big story about GE's announcement with IFT?
Yeah, I think last week they announced three channels or so.
Yeah. So basically, like, I'm sure most folks know what an if channel is, but basically it's, you know, there's this website where folks go and create like these third party recipes, and you can basically automate, your, you know, and connect devices that maybe don't have native connectivity or whatever, and have them sort of, you know, if you do this thing, then do this thing, then do this thing. And, I get pretty carried away with this for a while. I think I told you I had like things making spreadsheets, like things were making spreadsheets when people got home from the house. I don't know what I was doing. It was like, it was a total. It was ridiculous, but this actually seems pretty cool. So, so GE's channels, you know, one of the use cases is like, you could potentially have like your lights flash when, you know, your washer dryer is done with the laundry. So like, you know, real implications for like how you would use, you know, some of the channels to help you get stuff done in your house, right? So I think that actually it's pretty interesting. It also speaks to like, as opposed to going into the world of like, we're going to put Wi-Fi or we're going to put, you know, Z-Wave or Bluetooth or whatever inside of our smart home products. Like, it's sort of like looking at using IFT as a mechanism to connect, which I don't know, that's sort of a unique way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the beauty of IFT is just exponential combinations, right? So Now I can, because there's Alexa integration, I can now connect GE appliances with Alexa, whereas GE and Alexa and Amazon may have never talked to each other about this, but now I can send an alert whenever my GE washing machine is done with tumble drying or whatever. And so I think it's really cool. I have to wonder how mainstream this becomes over time. The thing I've always thought about with IFT is it still quite isn't as user friendly as I think it needs to be for mainstream consumers to use it. And so I love the idea of like a kind of a manufacturerless, like horizontal software layer, connection layer that allows you to just connect your favorite devices, and they want to kind of become that. But I just think they need to make another leap forward in usability. But I like this infinite ability to connect all these different, like, of these favorite devices in my life together and services in my life.
Yeah, it would be cool if there was an app or something that you could sort of put in like what you have in your house, and then it would like just pop up buttons of like, these are the different recipes you could hit, you could activate, and you just like press a button and it recognizes, finds the two devices, puts them into the recipe, and like, boom, it just does it, as opposed to you having to say like, I have this, so then do, you know, it's more, it definitely is a more manual, I think, like techie thing right now, but there definitely could be ways to make it more mainstream.
Yeah, I'm already noticing like a potential problem for them, the fact that they use the term recipe when it comes to the kitchen may be more and more confusing over time.
Yeah.
But I asked, one thing, someone had a great observation. I forgot who said it. It was someone at a conference. So forgive me for not giving proper credit. But one of the things people said about IFTTT or if this, then that, IFT, is it should have been IFTTTT. Like if it had just had one more T, it'd be infinitely more powerful. Like you can actually connect three services or do like a whole other branch of or layer of complexity. And I know that goes against what I just said, like making it more usable, but like for the power user, it seems like they're like maybe stopping short. Maybe they need to do like a premium service to make it like, you know, extra useful. And I can add one more, that on that or whatever. So.
Yeah. Well, the way you do that now is like you just create another recipe for, but off of that one, and then you could have it continue, but it is more complicated to do. So yeah, there needs to be maybe some more powerful long-term, but even then, I don't think consumers, like, I think in order for it to be really powerful, whether it's a scene within your ecosystem and your device or whatever, like, has to be really easy for someone to set up. Otherwise, it's just not going to get used. And then also, it's just, you're going to be missing on some really cool use cases. So many of like the cool smart home use cases or smart kitchen use cases happen when you get into the weeds with some of the stuff and like what is possible. And I think a lot of consumers miss that a little bit because they're not ready to, you know, tinker at that level.
Hey, one of the things I've been following is like how the broader tech media is following or tracking the smart kitchen. And so it felt like last year they paid attention a little bit. This year definitely seems like the interest is up. And one of the, I think the indicators of that is the fact that one of the companies that I've been following for a while, Spin Coffee, is actually part of TechCrunch's Startup Battlefield. I mentioned earlier that we're like TechCrunch Disruptor is actually going on right now. And I think Spin is actually pitching today. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I was really excited. It does seem like there's a little bit more mainstream coverage and interest in sort of smart kitchen or even food tech. I don't know if you saw sort of separate from Disrupt, but Recode had a new sort of a little announcement today that they're doing a little bit of retooling and refocusing on what their coverage areas. And one of the main coverage areas they announced is food tech, and I thought that was sort of fascinating. Like, I think food tech's a little bit kind of on the peripheral about what we talk about, but it's still, there's lots of implications and, you know, and then having startups on stage at Disrupt. And I do think there's an infiltration happening in the space of smart kitchen becoming more of like, you know, in the mainstream tech arena.
It's funny, when I was at GigaOm back like in 2011, it was kind of, you started to see the nearing of the end for like how mobile, now I mean, mobile's huge, right? But like covering mobile is like the main thing everyone does. Like everyone talked about for like 5 years straight. It started to plateau and people were starting to look towards new things. So like, you know, obviously IoT was starting to rise. So we, you know, they retooled a little bit towards that, and there's just lots of conversations. And I think we're kind of at another one of those inflection points where, okay, what's interesting now? Cause I think every couple of years, tech publications have to do that. And it makes sense that Recode, that's an interesting one. I actually didn't see that they're actually retooling and included food tech as one of them. That's pretty cool.
So I saw something on Twitter about Pico Brew, our friends at Pico Brew, the home brewing system. What's going on with them? They have a new Kickstarter?
No, actually, they're just kind of moving along on the progress of the last one. So the Pico.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I'm actually a backer, so I'm actually kind of interested. I'm waiting with bated breath for my Pico. I got it early. I got like the $500 one. So I thought that was
nice.
Any more, I probably would have gotten in trouble with the wife, like spending $500 on a home beer brewing appliance. I feel like that's like the maximum acceptable price for making a mess in my house. But I mean, the whole point of the Pico, hopefully, is we're not making too much of a mess. But they're actually tooling. They're kind of getting towards the point like they're actually tooling this thing out, and they're showing pictures on the Kickstarter. It's always fun when you back something. So they're definitely getting close. They are behind, though. I think that they said on the Kickstarter – they're going to ship in March. We're already in May. But, you know, nowadays, if you ship within like 3 months of what you said you're going to ship for hardware, you're probably doing okay.
That's amazing. I mean, most non-Kickstarter companies don't ship within 3 months of their shipping date, as someone who works with lots of companies. So I think that's pretty incredible. What's their plan for, so what's their new ship date? Are they sometime in the summer now?
They haven't given like a new one. They just said like once everything's finally tooled and they can start getting to the point they'll start making them. So it looks like a trajectory of like probably at June at this point. I can't wait much longer. I want to start brewing beer. So that's why I'm getting impatient.
You need to brew beer for the summer for sure.
Yeah.
what's their, what was their sort of like add-ons? Do they have additional stuff they're building out after they ship their first product?
Well, with the campaign, I think this was actually, we talked about this at the summit. One of the things they added was like sous vide cooking, which I don't know how well that did. They actually added like Pico packs. So you could buy as an add-on like 3 Pico brew packs. Because I don't know if you know the concept. It's like these brew packs that you have your different flavors of beer. And one of the things they didn't do at the beginning was like allow you to just order a bunch of different ones. So that they added that. And so, yeah.
Cool.
Pretty cool stuff.
Excellent. Well, when I come out to Seattle, you'll have to brew me some. I'll have to test some of your homebrew if I'm feeling adventurous.
I can't wait. I think the things I'm a little bit disappointed about I'm not disappointed in the Pico, but it certainly has less ability to do custom beer. I think they're going to open that up over time. I think they have talked about that. But with their first one, the Pico Brew is automatic. You can do all sorts of custom stuff, but it's a lot more messy. But yeah. I don't know if you've ever gotten into like savory beers or like spicy beers. One of the things they started shipping at Costco, my local Costco, they actually have sriracha beer.
I saw that somewhere as well, and that scares me to no end. I can't.
Oh, really?
I'm like, yeah, no.
Are you an anti-spice person?
I just don't like weird flavors combining. I get freaked out by like weird, like bacon like flavors.
It bothers you?
Yeah, like remember when bacon was a thing? Like everything was bacon, like bacon flavored everything. Like that I couldn't get over it. I'm like, I don't know. It seems
you can definitely overdo the bacon. Like the bacon on everything.
Yeah, like chocolate covered bacon. Like, what is that?
That's, yeah,
that can't be.
That's true. I bought like popcorn bacon popcorn. Like, it made me feel sick when I ate it. I was like,
was it just a bag of bacon bits? Like, what is?
I think what probably made me sick was it was like bacon flavoring popcorn, which
like bag.
Yeah, some industrial compound that tasted like bacon applied to popcorn. It was not a good experience.
No, it doesn't sound healthy at all. But you also recently bought something, another kitchen tech device that you're like really psyched about that's not related to bacon at all.
Was like bacon flavored industrial compound like a kitchen tech that you're segueing from to like
that was my spiralizer segue. Story? It was my brilliant segue.
So well, maybe the spiralizer is on the same like kind of level of technology as bacon flavored industrial compound, because one of the things I've been wondering about. Have you been noticing the interest in the spiralizer over the last year or two?
Yes. I mean, I have seen like everybody posting pictures of their like, you know, vegetable pasta on Instagram. Yeah.
So I've been wanting, I finally bit the bullet and bought one. It got to my house and I have yet to use it. But one of the questions I had is like, is something like the spiralizer kitchen technology, you know, we follow connected devices and, you know, core cooking innovation, like things like the June oven. But sometimes like something like this, just a new kitchen invention like this, is just like something that could be really popular and change the way a lot of people cook. Maybe people start making vegetable pasta in like a lot more frequency. Is this kitchen tech is what I'm getting at?
I mean, I think it's a kind of like the original kitchen tech, right? I mean, like it's like a gadget, but it's low tech, but it's still kind of, you know, some like a gadget you would have that's not part of your core, you know, cooking appliances, stuff you use every single day. My question about that, or just in general, is like, how many of these can you have and how useful are they in your house? Like, I got a lot of these for my wedding. Like, I didn't get a spiralizer, but I got like some gadgets and stuff because I had a cooking themed shower, like bridal shower that my best friend threw me, and it was super fun and really good food. And I got all these fun little gadgets, and I don't really use any of them, but the spiralizer seems to be really well used, and you know, people are like maybe cooking healthier. So I don't know. It's certainly probably something that's helping us eat better, or, you know, turn things into pasta that wasn't pasta before. So that's better. I don't know. Are you going to make a lot of, what are your plans for? Are you going to make
zucchini pasta? I want to make some sort of pasta, but I think you made a good distinction with the difference between a gadget and like a technology innovation that's like more of a on the disruptive side of things. I think this more falls on the gadget side of things. And at some point, if like everyone starts using it and it really changes healthy habits, you know, I think that's great. It's where it falls on the – maybe there's like a continuum of like cooking innovation. One side is like gadget, or maybe it's like multi-dimensional.
Yeah, well, and also I think things like that influence the way people who are designing products or, you know, recipes or whatever think about like what's next. So like if something becomes really popular, then maybe there will be a connected or disruptive technology based on, you know, turning different foods into pasta someday, right? I mean, maybe that will be a thing. But yeah, I think for now it's a gadget.
Well, maybe I'll report back on our next catch up on how I'm doing with my spiralizer.
Yes, you'll have to take pictures to accompany the show notes.
So we had some news besides the Williams-Sonoma event we're having this Thursday, which is really the first in like hopefully a series of evening events. It's kind of the first thing we've done outside of the summit. That's just a smaller event. It's the first time we've gotten out of Seattle. I'm excited about that. But the other big news is we actually talked about the first announcement around speakers.
Yeah, so they're on the website now in the speaker section. You can see who is going to be speaking, at least, you know, the early speakers who have signed on. And we have already an incredible lineup. I'm so excited. I mean, we've been working with people like Sharon Frank from Good Housekeeping since for a while now. She's been on our advisory council, but she's going to be speaking hopefully about some consumer behaviors and thoughts towards the smart kitchen. And I mean, just really incredible people have already signed on. I have to say, I'm very excited. Wilson Rothman, who is, you know, personal favorite writer of mine, is also going to be speaking. He's a personal tech editor from Wall Street Journal. So also goes to speak to the sort of mainstream folks getting interested in the space. But really people are sort of coming to us with proposals and wanting to talk about, you know, their thoughts, their products. And it's already so much, I think, bigger than last year. It's kind of surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, and we have some that we haven't even announced yet that are coming in a second wave. But yeah, you mentioned Wilson. Doug Evans is going to be there. I'm excited. He'll be hopefully showing Juiceros. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting. And actually, we are officially in the month that our early bird tickets are going to sell out. So May 31st, right, is the last day for the earliest possible ticket pricing for Smart Kitchen Summit,
We're kind of nearing the end of it.
Yeah, counting down to May 31st. So if you want to go to the summit, which if you're listening to this podcast, you know you do, then you should definitely get your tickets before May 31st, because after that, the prices go up. And we are going to be getting ready to announce more speakers and programming, right? We're still working on all of the different, the agenda for the whole session summit will be announced probably sometime in the summer once we get that all fleshed out too. So lots of exciting stuff to come.
Yeah, we got lots of great ideas. I'm so excited. It's going to be so cool this year.
Yeah, it's very cool. And, you know, if you're in San Francisco right now and you want to come to the Williams-Sonoma event on Thursday, hopefully we'll get this out before Thursday, then you should definitely check out the Eventbrite on smartkitchensummit.com. We have a link right up there and you can get tickets definitely close to selling out, but it's going to be super cool. Good food, good drinks, good company. And I mean, who doesn't want to go to the Williams-Sonoma test kitchen? It's going to be awesome.
Exactly. People, do you know where this thing is? It's like, yeah, exactly. Go.
I mean, it's inside, like, the Williams-Sonoma. Like, you walk in there, you're like, it's the Mecca. So you're going to
Did I tell you that they're bringing Juiceros, bringing juicers? I did. I think I mentioned that.
You did, and I suggested you mix that with the cocktails, and you have ultimate healthy cocktail fun. I'm sure Doug would be psyched about that. So
what are you waiting for, people? Yeah, and Voltaggio, like he won Top Chef, right? He won Top Chef.
I know, and have you – I know. He's incredible. He's going to be on stage talking, and it's going to be great. And also, it's lots of events are going on in the Bay Area, IoT World and everything. So lots of folks should be there and come to the event that night.
All right, folks. All right, Ashley. Thanks for doing this.
It was good to talk to you, Mike. Right, take care.
Bye. Smart Kitchen Show is brought to you by Technology.fm, Next Market Insights, and the Smart Kitchen Summit. All the music for today's show is created by Paul Tyan, T-Y-A-N. Check him out on SoundCloud. You can now find the Smart Kitchen Show on iTunes, or just go to smartkitchensummit.com/show. For Season 2, we hope to bring you lots more stories and different conversations and mix up the format a little bit. So stay tuned. And if you want to come to Smart Kitchen Summit, you know where to go, smartkitchensummit.com.